So our next talk is on the use of technology to improve influenza vaccination rates among healthcare workers at a pediatric healthcare facility. And this is from the Children's Hospitals and Clinics of Minnesota. And Stephanie and I will be sharing our experience there. We are a unionized hospital. We have used the declination process for 3 years. And so we'll entertain some questions about that if you like. So you all know how important this is, and it recognized that healthcare workers be immunized. I'm the lone nurse on the voting membership of the ACIP, and I'm very strongly behind our recommendations, and especially working in a children's hospital, all you have to do is walk up to the pediatric intensive care unit and see agonizing parents or a child struggling for their life from a vaccine-preventable disease, and it's easy to get passionate about the work that we do. So we are the ones who take care of the kids when our systems fail. And the healthcare information, the infection control agencies support this, Joint Commission, et cetera, and Rick nicely went through where our current rates are, so I won't go over those again. So Children's Hospital, we're the sixth largest children's hospital in the United States. In the metropolitan area, we have a hospital in St. Paul and a hospital in Minneapolis. We used to be competitors. We merged 12 years ago. We're one happy family now. And we have 300 acute care beds, and over 50% of them are considered critical care. So you can see why we consider this very important that our employees are immunized. Many of our patients, we have a large oncology unit, one of the largest neonatal intensive care units in the country, a 50-bed private room in St. Paul and equally as large in Minneapolis. And attached to that, we have some of the largest outpatient clinics in the state of Minnesota. Our Minneapolis clinic serves 80% vaccine for children, and St. Paul has 50% of our kids are on VFC. So we're right in the middle of these cities and have ambulatory surgery centers throughout the metropolitan area. So geographically, we have to catch up with people. We're not nearly the size that Rick talked about, but ours are 4,000 employees at our nursing staff, administration support staff. We struggled as well with trying to group our employees with direct patient care, semi-direct patient care, like a social worker, a child life specialist, the unit coordinators, and then those who have no direct patient care at all. We also took a look this year at our 1,500 non-employed professional staff members. They're employed physician and advanced practice registered nurses, psychologists, and social workers who are on our professional staff. And some of them are employed. Most of them are not. They're out in the community in their own private practices. Our credentials committee said this year they wanted to make it mandatory that they document with the hospital that they have in fact been immunized. That was not quite as successful, but we'll talk a little bit about that and lessons learned there. So we do the usual interventions that you all do, the preseason promotions, the on-site, the roving carts, the incentives, staff meetings, mass clinics, the follow-up clinics, all those good interventions that we know work. And we all know that the literature says the more interventions you have, the greater the likelihood of trying to reach people. I think one of our greatest struggles is really getting a good handle on the number. We put into policy and language that you need to know your hospital influenza immunization rate, but it's a lot easier said than done. You have to figure out your denominator. And in hospitals, there's a lot of people that come and go. You have new employees every day. You have people that retire. You have volunteers. You have students. You have contractors. You have people who are not part of the organization. Do you count them or don't you count them? And so over the years, we've taken sort of our best stab, and we've gone anywhere from 60%. In 1999, we did a more in-depth study trying to figure out how many people are immunized outside of our organization, and it was about 9%. And so that makes us get right up there at 71%, so we were pleased with that. But right, being immunized within Children's was right around in the mid-60s or so. But we just felt like we were at this ceiling. How in the world can we get over the 60s hump? How do we improve our immunization rates? And again, it's so difficult to assess these rates and figure out who is vaccinated within Children's, outside of Children's, et cetera. So some of our attempts have been the data entry and the mailings, the paper sort of, you know, traditional way that you come, you sign your form, you get your shot, and you have to manually do data entry with the paper. To get that done and get information back to employees, back to their managers, back to medical directors in a timely way was really difficult. Then we decided to try to go to scannable forms in 2006, and I thought this was going to be the big breakthrough. And I don't know, you're probably a room full of healthcare workers, and healthcare workers try to do things quickly and efficiently. And so a scan needs a box and a bubble filled in perfectly. So what do healthcare workers do? One big line down all of the boxes. And what does that do to your scanning machine? It totally stops it. And so scannable forms were a complete nightmare that did not work for us at all. So lesson learned, I wouldn't try it. So we went then to a web application that Stephanie's going to come up and talk about from her information technology background.
Okay, so Infection Control came to us, IT, and we sat down and we talked about what the goals would be for this application. We knew we needed it to be easily accessible, so we wanted it to be web-based. We wanted it to screen for injectable and intranasal vaccine eligibility. We wanted to integrate the declination process. We wanted to provide timely overall vaccination rates, and we also wanted to provide timely department-specific rates. So FluVax Trax was born. This was an internal web-based application. It was written in ASP Active Server Pages. It is a Microsoft SQL Server database. Some of the high points are that it was based on employee ID. It did determine their injectable versus nasal eligibility. There were also auto-generated emails that went out, which were nice. They served as both a thank you note once you were vaccinated, and also it had their date and time of vaccination. So it was great for military personnel or other staff that had privileges at other facilities. They could use this as proof that they had been vaccinated. For decliners, it urged them to reconsider their decision. And I'm going to go ahead and switch to this laptop.
I'm going to just show you how quick and easy the FluVax Trax program was. Thankfully, they do it, because that would give me heartburn doing the technology.
Okay, so this is FluVax Trax. Again, it was intranet-based. Thank you. We would have kiosks set up at the flu clinics, and people would walk up to these kiosks. The first question would be if they were a children's employee or not. I'm going to go ahead and say I was a children's employee. Then they're asked to enter their employee ID number. We verify, is this really you? Make sure they didn't mistype. Yes, that's me. Then they came to this flu menu where they could say what kind of vaccine they wanted, either the injectable, the nasal. They could say they've already received their flu vaccine or that they're choosing to decline. I'm going to go ahead and select the injectable. Here we ask them some questions about if they've ever had a reaction. I'm going to say no. No allergy to thimerosal. And yes, I feel great today. Let's click submit. And they're done. At this point, we've recorded that they did receive their vaccine and the date and time. This is when the auto-generated email was sent out, and we tell them to take their pink VIS form and go up to the vaccinators. They can then click this return to start, which brings them back, and the data is cleared out for the next person. I'm going to go through it one more time and walk through the declination process. So again, I enter in my employee ID. Yes, it's still me. And I'm going to select to decline. Here we give them the option that maybe they've had a past reaction, they know they can't get the vaccine. So we ask them that question. If they say no, we submit this. Now we assume that they have really no good reason to not get a flu shot. So we're going to have them read each of these statements. The first one says, I understand that flu vaccine is strongly recommended for me and all other employees and professional staff at Children's to prevent influenza disease and its complications, including the possibility of death. And then they need to click to acknowledge that. Secondly, I understand that if I contract influenza, I could spread the flu virus to others for 1 to 2 days before I am sick with the flu. Check that one. I understand that if I get the flu, even if my symptoms are mild, I can spread the virus to patients in this healthcare facility, my coworkers, my family, and my community that may cause them severe illness. I understand that I cannot get influenza disease from the flu vaccine. So we ask them again, yes, are you choosing not to be vaccinated? And we submit it. At this point, we've recorded that they declined their flu vaccine, and they are sent an email urging them to reconsider their decision. I'm going to switch back over. Okay, so we also had a scaled-down version of FluVax tracks, which we used for the professional staff. This gave them the ability to just say that they had already been vaccinated, they were planning to be vaccinated, or they were declining. This was accessed through our professional staff portal, which is a secure password-protected website. And this, again, was written in Active Server Pages with the Microsoft SQL Server database. We also had what we call the FluBot. This was a robot process that ran nightly, and the purpose of this was to refresh our data in the FluVax Tracks database with data from our HR system. So that included their employee ID, their name, email, job code, and department. So new employees could be added as they were hired, and employee data could be updated as needed. Then we had, this was kind of neat, we had this little thermometer that lived on children's intranet, and it reflected the real-time immunization rates as well as declinations throughout the flu season. So I think you said it was kind of neat to watch it go up during each flu clinic. And I'll turn it back over.
Yeah, we had one flu clinic. It was getting near the end of our sessions, and we had a very long day, and we had the thermometer up on a screen, and we were at 49% all afternoon. I thought, oh, come on, we can do 50, we got to do it. And there were three people left in line, and the third person, that thing clipped over to 50%, and we cheered, and we said, oh, gosh, we got to get a life if this excites us. But so here we have a process. As you know, flu vaccine is an all-year-round activity, and so in the fall we start with our communication and tell them that we're going to this computerized system this year. In November we did our on-site clinics in a majority of our sites. We had up to six computer stations where people sat down. We did weekly updates then to medical directors and managers through the end of January how their specific department was doing. And so it was really kind of constant communication from October to January. And maybe over-communication, we're trying to kind of balance that because I do think, you know, we can be tuned out. And then the updates started before the conclusion of the last on-site clinic. So if we were at the St. Paul campus, we'd say, okay, Friday is the last flu vaccine clinic on this campus. It'll be more difficult to go to a mass flu vaccine clinic after that. And then we did reminder emails sent to those who we haven't heard from, nice friendly reminders. And here's what it looked like. So the staff just sat down, they had their laptops opened and the vaccine information statements in pink for the injectable and green for intranasal were available, and depending on what they chose would tell them which VIS to take, and that was color coded. And here's our happy chief of staff. He's a pediatrician. And next to him is one of our union leaders, who's a charge nurse in the NICU. And I thought they were both just great role models getting into our very first flu vaccine clinic. In December, of course, we go through the children's intranet to those who were vaccinated elsewhere and had known contraindications or declined, and followed them. We continued to send emails, and I sent a special email to any department that was under 60% and paid a special visit to people who, a personal visit to people who were under 50%. trying to see what their issues were. For example, our environmental services were at 30% for a very long time, and so we got some interpreters down there and did special nurses sitting in the clinic and just really kind of designed a very targeted outreach to that particular department. In January, we sent second reminder emails to employees who we had not yet heard from. February, we finalized our rates, and the good month of March, we've been cleaning our data, giving out department awards for those who have increased their rates the most, et cetera, communicating and celebrating in the organization. And here's how we did. When you look at the national average in the light blue, and then look at our 2006-07 rate, when we used the lovely scannable forms, we were at 64%. And this year, with our FluVax tracks, we did get up to 74%. Declination was used last year with scannable, and this season with our electronic. We did have an education component about if you don't get vaccinated, you need to wear a mask. It wasn't one of the sign-off, check-off things because we did get a little bit of pushback. So we decided to do a little softer sell this year where it was a side-by-side education campaign. So screensavers would come up showing people wearing masks that if you have not had your flu vaccine, you need to be wearing a mask. We didn't monitor it or measure it or enforce it, but we initiated that concept this year and we'll probably be measuring that more next year. We know how many declined. It was 10% last year, and we went down this year to 3% who actually came to tell us that they were declining. And this last population really irritates our CEO and me, and that is, how can a fourth of our employees just sort of do nothing, not come and decline, not tell us they have a medical contraindication, not get immunized? And that's where the whole mandatory vaccination, that you won't get your paycheck if you don't get your flu vaccine, we're not there yet. We actually talked about it as an organization because our leadership team feels so strongly about it. But we are really going to work on continuing to see that unknown number drop. And here's one of the samples that we'd send out to the departments, and we send it out to the entire organization. Everybody's rates are known, and we let the managers know that before we started all this, that this will be very transparent. Your department success or lack thereof will be public information. And you can see that, for example, the dark purple, the PEDS clinic, they were really great. They got out of the gates really early. After the first clinic, they were at 94%, and with just a little bit of effort, they hit 100%, as opposed to our friends in the emergency department. They don't need masks, they don't need flu shots, they are Wonder Women and men, and they don't get sick. I've worked here 27 years, I've had everything I can have, I'm never going to, so, you know, I love them, but they have a mind of their own. So 65% is what they got up to. And respiratory therapy, who takes care of the children with influenza? Respiratory, this is like an epidemiologic nightmare here, the emergency room, the respiratory therapist. So they got little special visits, and because they were at 30, 40% for quite a long time and did get up over 60, so I was pleased with that, but would like to see them higher. And so this is just one example of our St. Paul campus. And then we did break it down by discipline, and you can see, to try to help us figure out next year, where do we target our interventions? There weren't tremendous differences, except we really do need to have more personal sit-downs with our respiratory therapy colleagues. So you can see the differences in percentages there. And using that human resource database, you can just slice and dice the data any way you want, by where they work, by whether they're part-time or full-time, all kinds of great information. And here is one of our anesthesiologists getting his flu vaccine. There's two kinds of kids, two kinds of adults, the ones that like to look and the ones that don't like to look. So he's a looker. So this was just one example of how the transparency helped a lot. We had two of our outpatient clinics, as I said, one in St. Paul campus, one in the Minneapolis campus. And you can see we compared those rates in November, December, and then our final rate. And clinic number two, as I said, were really early. They got it to 94% early in November. Well, clinic one did not like that. And the medical director sent out emails. He went around and talked to people. He said, they cannot get higher than us. We are going to hit it. We're going to get 100%. And they never did, but they did go from 71 to 89% with pure peer pressure. So the transparency helped a lot. So the advantages are, it really does help you determine your actual employee vaccine rate. It helped us clean out those who were employed and not employed, who were volunteers, who were students. It helped us give, really, right in the middle of the season, timely feedback to all of our employees, medical directors, managers. We gave them thank you emails. We gave them reminder emails right at the right time. It helped us to give weekly updates to departments and, as I said, separated those who were privileged and not employed to those who are employed. And again, job type, on-call status, it was just really interesting data. So what did we learn? We were a little concerned that people would be intimidated by the computers, and they weren't at all. The staff were really easily able to use the application. We would have one person sort of staff that the computer stations, just making sure that people re-ramped it back up to the start page. It was very, very fast, and in fact, some people said, oh, I don't know, computers and then the vaccine, that's gonna slow things down. If there was ever any waiting, it was for the vaccinators, not for the computer project part of it. So improvements needed for a completely paperless system is one of our goals for next year. So for example, if you trotted over to the occupational health clinic, they did not have the computer system there. It's a contracted services with our adult hospital neighbor. So we'd have to take those papers and then enter it into this program. So we had a flu deputy program also where there was vaccine up on the nursing floors and they didn't have the computers, they used paper, so we'd enter those as well. So our future plans are to not only have their personalized HR information, but we're going to marry it up with their OCHealth vaccine record. So when Stephanie's name came up and said, is this you, Stephanie D'Antoni, and she said clicked on yes, the next screen that is going to come up next year will say, here's all the vaccines we understand that you have had. Because we call this a vaccine clinic. We give influenza vaccine, we gave Tdap, we gave second dose MMR to those who needed it. We gave Mantos. It was a really busy clinic, and one radiology tech actually got four things. So that we do have a photo of her with four Band-Aids on. But we do want to get at this transparency issue where the managers got information in aggregate, and this was one of the things that the union asked us and was one of the areas where we compromised. They said, we don't want the manager knowing that Susie Smith has declined, because then that might become a disciplinary process. Well, interestingly, when we would send people reminder emails, they'd go up to their manager and say, oh, I got it at my doctor's office yesterday. So the employees are telling their managers. So I think this is one of those things we need to get over. And the transparency would just help really direct the communication rather than barraging your whole entire department for a 6% change in your rates. More direct follow-up would be better. So it was successful. We improved our vaccination rate by 13%. The departments really found the timely feedback much more helpful than the end of the season. Here's how you did. And as you can see, we had many happy campers. Questions? Go ahead.
I was wondering if you gave a thought to looking at the people that didn't show up at all.
Yes.
Try to get some information about
what
the issue was there. And the second comment I wanted to make about the declination piece of it, as everybody knows, that was a JCO, part of the JCO standard that was pulled back, mainly because people felt it was going to take too much of their time to try to find people and make them sign on the declination piece of it. So whether you want to comment about that or not.
Yes. So in regards to your first question, are we going to follow up? Yes, we were going to get to the National Immunization Conference, survive our talks, and then when we go back home, we are going to take that population that we know are those non-responders, and we are going to do a survey of them and try to drill down. We've asked this question before, what are the issues, and it's the same as the literature and same as some of the things that Rick, but I want to talk to them more personally about how can we better communicate with you and tell us how to do our job better. The declination process, we know it's sort of come in and out of favor a little bit. I've found it helpful, and we went and sat down with our unions and our leadership team, and we had to compromise a little bit on the language. They wanted us to take out that "and even death." They were like, "Well, that's too harsh. You know, we don't want even death in there." And I said, "Well, then we're not telling the truth." And so they let us keep that in. But the declination is an important piece, and we still do use it. Yes.
For staff that received their vaccine at the physician's offices, did you require them to bring in proof that they had received it, or they just checked on their form they received it?
We're very trustworthy in Minnesota, so no. They did not have to give us proof. They just could tell us that. So, and we know some people probably just checked it to get us off their back.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You may have already answered this, but of the people who declined, do you have information on if they declined the first time going through the program, did they actually get the vaccination when they answered all those questions?
Yes.
Like, no. Do you have information on if they got the vaccination or after, like, the email sent out, did they come back and get a vaccination?
That's a great question. So when we were practicing our talk, I said, you know, someone's going to ask us on that declination, and we technically don't know because once they decline and they get that screen, then it closes out. And if they change their mind and came back, it would be like they're a brand new person. We don't have those linked together, but that is something that we're going to try to technologically figure out.
Your flu VaxTrack system, that software looks really nice, and I was just wondering, can that be made accessible to others? Because you guys created that on your own, correct?
Yeah.
Yes,
we did.
Stephanie did.
Yeah. If you want to give me your contact information, I can talk to you about that.
Okay. Too. Yeah, it's great, but if it could be utilized at other places and nationwide and all, you know, anyone who's interested.
We're into sharing. We just have to ask permission from the CIO, but yes, we'd be willing to do that.
So I have two quick questions. I think you answered the first one about the truthfulness of Minnesotans, but if someone went through and said, yes, I want it, and they take the pink slip, and then they walk out the door and don't go through the vaccination process, does the vaccinator end up doing anything in the system to say, yes, I did vaccinate this person?
No, they could do that. They could come in, except we have it in such a tight flow that they have to get past us to get out. And so we really know that they're getting immunized, yeah.
Okay. My second question is, was there any conversations with the Minnesota State Registry about sharing the data back with the State Registry? I don't know if Minnesota's is a lifespan registry or not.
You know, that is a great question, and we have not done that or talked about it, but we have our MDH pals that are here. We'll definitely talk with them about that. That's a great idea.
This question is actually for both of you, so I'm just curious what you think the impact of offering the intranasal vaccine was on the program. I know you didn't mention it, you did not mention it, Dr. Zimmerman, but I wondered whether you did offer it, if you didn't, if you could comment on that, and actually from your presentation, do you think it actually increased the rate of participation, or did it have not any impact as well at all?
We'll let Dr. Mick Zimmerman answer that first. Go ahead.
One of the earlier years in the live attenuated cycle, when it still had, it was the year there was the most precautions about spread to severely immunocompromised persons, and also the year that there was the shortage of inactivated vaccine, we were given or purchased substantial quantities of course, this is the older version of the live attenuated, and we couldn't give it away. There was substantial concerns in the workers. Now, we're a major transplant center. We do have bone marrow, and so we do have people working on units where it is truly contraindicated. And we have others in gray units, but we found a very low acceptance back then. So since then, it has been available if you really request it substantially, but employee health, I don't think, has felt, and I'm not part of employee health, but I don't feel like they, given that one bad year, that they have felt it was a good investment. Now we probably should relook at that because there is the new formulation, there is new, not as stringent precautions.
Well, we've had intranasal flu vaccine for the past 3 years, and I personally have had it for the last 3 years, and we've offered it. We had a bump in the road this year because of supply. We advertised it, we're all ready to go, and then didn't have our supply when we needed it for our vaccine clinics. I do think that there were people that definitely came and asked for it, but just when we look back in 1999 about some of the issues of why people don't get immunized, it's amazing how many people who work in healthcare have a fear of needles. It is surprising, the percentage. And so then I thought, oh, flu mist, this will help a lot. Well, I think there's also a fear of water squirted up your nose, people. So, I don't know what it is with us healthcare workers, but so I think that it did help because we had two things to offer. If you don't like needles, we've got a backup for you. So anyway, we're out of time. Thank you very much for coming, and happy St. Patrick's Day.